Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Om Shri Sai Ram. Offering myself at Bhagwan's lotus feet, this is Karuna signing in live from Prashanti Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. Welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live, coming to you from the Radio Sai Studios in Prashanti Nilayam. Till a few moments ago, you were listening to this morning's Vedam and Bhajans coming to you live on our Asia stream from the Sai Kulwant Hall. It is exactly 41 minutes past 9 a.m. Indian Standard Time on Thursday morning, July the 23rd, 2015. The Mangal Aarti has just concluded in the Sai Kulwant Hall and the devotees are right now lined up for darshan of the holy Mahasannidhi. The ashram atmosphere is still reverberating with the sacred energy of the Vedam and the Bhajans sung by Bhagwan's beloved and talented students. As always, I know it sounds cliched, but this really is the truth. It's a beautiful morning here in Prashanti Nilayam with comfortable temperatures. Our lows are in the 23 to 24 degrees Celsius, highs around 33 degrees Celsius. At this moment, I first need to pause, and on behalf of our entire team at Radio Sai, I offer myself at the lotus feet of the love of all our lives, the source and goal of our existence, our dearest Lord Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. And at Radio Sai, with love and humility, we bow to the same Lord Sai who resides in each of our listeners. So loving Sai Rams once again to all our brothers and sisters around the world who are tuned to Morning Glory right now. With that, let's take off this morning's program by reminding ourselves what a sacred month we have just gone through. Millions of Muslims all over the world have just concluded observing the holy month of Ramzan. On last Saturday, that's July the 18th, we celebrated Ramzan here in Prashanti Nilayam with special prayers and offerings in the Sai Kulwant Hall. Ramzan or Ramadan is an important time in our calendars as it reminds us of the delights and the gravity of Islam's holiest month. The richness of Ramadan comes through this period of bonding, sharing and feasts, of getting up for breakfast and prayers with one's family when the world is quiet, of breaking the fast every day after nightfall in celebration and prayers with friends and strangers. It actually breaks barriers and binds Muslims of diverse national or cultural backgrounds, all in the name of Allah. On that holy note, I feel inspired to share with you some edifying words from Ms. Maya Angelou. That is the great and now late Maya Angelou. She says, and I quote her, "You don't need another person, place or thing to make you whole. God already did that. Your job is to know it." Dear brothers and sisters, I'm going to repeat it because this is so profound yet so simple. You don't need another person, place or thing to make you whole. God already did that. Your job is to know it. With that, I'm now delighted to treat you to an interview that I promise you will not forget easily. This is a very important and meaningful conversation, and it is in two parts. Now, given its importance and clarity, especially with regards to the confusion that is prevailing in the minds of a few devotees regarding how they can establish connection with Swami, I'm going to play both parts of this interview right here this morning on Morning Glory. So first you will listen to part one, after which we will slip into a short break, and on the other side of the break we will resume part two today itself. So please don't go anywhere. And dear listeners, I really request you to stay with us for the entire duration of Morning Glory, that is till the conclusion of part 2 of today's interview, as you may find in it just the clarity you need in light of the prevailing misinformation and confusion that is taking so many off the path of truth into a world of make-believe. Without any further delay, over now to part 1 of Learning with Love interview with the long-time devotee of Bhagwan Sri Satyasai Baba, Mr. Henry Tan of Singapore. And please keep in mind that part 2 of this Learning with Love conversation with Mr. Henry Tan will follow after part 1, but there is just a short break in between. So please stay with us, and here it is for your listening pleasure. Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Learning with Love. Our guest today is from Singapore. His name is Mr. Henry Tan Kok Hui. Mr. Henry Tan Kok Hui is a native of Singapore and also the former national chairman of the SAI organization in that country, where he served from 1991 to 1993. Presently, he is the advisor of the Satya Sai Mission of Singapore. By profession, he is an entrepreneur and he has interest in a diverse group of businesses, including biotechnology, water technologies, insurance investments, organic farming, vermicology, health products, and ICT, that is Internet Communication Technology Security. So he really has left nothing out. He's got his finger in every pie, as you can see. And he claims that all these diverse businesses did not go seeking them. They kind of came to him because people wanted to work with him because of his reputation as a Sai devotee, which is very interesting. And all his success he attributes to his following Swami's teachings and the grace and blessings that he has received from Swami through a very long list of interviews that he has had with him. Currently, though he considers himself retired professionally, he continues to work to garner enough support for the various Sai missions and the good work that is being done all over the world in the name of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. On that happy note, I'm very pleased to welcome Mr. Henry Tan of Singapore to Learning with Love.
Thank you.
Sairam, brother.
Sairam.
It's so nice to have you with us. And because you're one of those few people who just came to Swami very spontaneously and without even quite realizing what blessings were going to be showered upon you, you had so many close encounters with the Lord.
Yes, that's right.
But before I begin and ask you about the lessons that your life and your association with Baba has taught you, I'd like to know from you, today is Easter Sunday, April the 5th, 2015. And why are you here on this very hot day in Puttaparthi with your family?
Well, fundamentally, it is gratitude. In life, you don't have gratitude, it's meaningless. And all the blessings that Swami has given me, all the interviews, almost amounting to about 40 interviews throughout the last 30 years, Swami has given me a lot of blessings. So his physical body is not here. It happened on Easter Sunday, although it was on 24th of April. So I make it a point that on every Easter, which is today, and I come here and pay my thanks, gratitude to Swami. And today is Easter Sunday, and it's very apt moment, and this is Swami's arrangement, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And it's his wish that you should come to Radio Sai and share your learning.
Yes, and then through you, you have invited me, which I didn't expect, and I hope I can share my experiences with listeners globally.
Definitely. And now, nearly 40 interviews. Mm. They must have taught you so much.
Oh, a lot. Because when I came to Swami that time, it was like a friend seeking a friend. I didn't know he was God. I didn't know who he was, an avatar, or he is an avatar. It's just like, oh, you are there, and I heard a lot about you, and I just came with my wife and two other friends. And the first time when I came in Puttaparthi, it was all sand. On the lady side was only about a few hundred people. 300-400 people. On the men's side was only about 300-400 people. And Swami comes out on the dot. And the moment he saw me, he asked me where I was. Where did I come from? I said, from Singapore. And immediately he called me for an interview. So my first trip, I already had two interviews. So my second interview was when I was packed and ready to go off, and you say I was called for interview again. So during interview, many things happened. And from then on, every year when I visited Prashanti, Swami will invariably call me for interview. Sometimes once, sometimes twice, sometimes four times, you know. Two in Whitefield and two in Parapati. So from there, I observed a lot of stories. I've seen a lot of creation, materialization, a lot of talks, things that not every ordinary devotee will see and witness. So I think maybe this is a time for me to share. And I also know why Swami gave me so many interviews, maybe for this moment.
So in these very many interviews, all that he taught you, what part of it stayed with you and became your mantra for life? What is it that you cherish the most, the lessons you have learned? If you can share some of your top lessons with our listeners.
The most important thing is never fear whatever happens in life. Never fear. Because you've seen Swami, you know Swami, you read his books, his discourses. The bottom line you must learn is that never fear whatever happens. Rich, poor, healthy, sick, miserable, in pain, in sorrow, whatever, never fear. Because our life here is very short. Everybody must go. And Swami said, you must believe you are the soul, you are the Atma. So that is my belief. And I always tell my wife that even when I walk away tomorrow, you don't find me wake up, be happy and sing bhajans for me, you know. Because you realize that particular aspect of our life, the life is never permanent. So whatever it is in my life, when I move around to people, I always tell them, do whatever you want, but you bear the consequences. But ultimately you realize, then you try and do good, be good, see good. So maybe I can start with telling you that in one interview, I gave Swami one of the early interviews. My interviews started from 1982 to about 1996. So during one of the early interviews, I came to Swami and I said, Swami, like a friend, you know, I said, I have a card, my business card. Can you write something for me, you know? And what he wrote was, be good, do good, see good. And the C was spelled in capital S, capital E, and capital E. So the C is more important than be good. You can be good very easily. Don't talk to people, stay at home, and don't have any social interaction. You're good. But see good in others is the most difficult part. That was the first lesson that Swami taught me. So that's one interview. And I want to share with you that Swami is all-knowing. And he knows what you're doing. And that's a lesson I learned. In 1982, during my first interview, Swami gave me a pendant. And I didn't know the pendant was so rare. And I took the pendant, I sent it to Taiwan to make into a mold and to produce 100,000 pendants. For what purpose? It is Baba's image was at the front and the Om was behind. It was for a International Bhavikas Year Conference in 1983. So I did it merrily. I got some devotees came with me. And on the way to Parapati, Swami already came out for his darshan, starting from the lady's side. And I came in a taxi. I ran with four bags of pendants, each bag containing 100 pendants, put in my bag and went straight at the back of the darshan line. There was about 12, 13 lines at that time. And when I was sat down and Swami came from the lady's side to the man's side, and immediately he pointed to me, come. So I stood up and I said, excuse me, went to the front. Then I took out two bags of pendant and gave to Swami. Swami, this is for the Bhavikas children. Then he took it. I said, Swami, can I interview tomorrow? Yes, tomorrow I'll see you. I'm not shy to ask. Every time I see him, I ask for an interview, you know. And invariably he will get it. In the evening when I went back, now this is Swami's power here. When I went back to my flat, and my brother and sister came with the balance of the stock, and I counted, it was exactly 100 bags again. So what happened was, I realized, Swami can do anything. He took the two bags, gave to the sevara behind him, and in the evening, it was back into my room. exactly 100 practices. So that was the first realization that, Swami, thank you very much. You're doing a bit of magic trick on me, you know. So at that time, I didn't know much about his divine powers. So that was an eye-opener for me. Then another interview, it happened during Guru Purnima. I didn't know what was Guru Purnima. So many people. And I saw Swami on the lady's side. At that time, it was Ganesha, you know, with the same...
In the center, there was a circle with the Ganesha. Yeah.
So Swami came on the lady's side. When he saw me on the man's side, he signaled me to come up. So I got up, I went, I met him in front of Ganesh statue, and I did my, I asked Swami, can I do Pada Namaskar here? I mean, out in the open, a bit shy, you know, so I asked Swami, he said, yes, yes. So I took all my time, Swami stood there, and looked down on me, and I took his robe, moved up his robe, saw his lotus feet and kissed him and thanked him. He saw me again. Can I have an interview? So yes, tomorrow you interview, you know. So at that time, you know, it was some special event. Then one brother from Mumbai came. He said, brother Swami, bless you on this special day. I said, what's so special today? He said, today is Guru Purnima. I said, what is Guru Purnima? I don't even know what is Guru Purnima at that time. So can I have a chat with you? He said, sure. I said, come to my flat. At that time in Puttaparthi, there was only one round block. The rest were all nothing and some sheds only. So every time when I come here, I get a flat, I thank Swami. So he came up and he said to me, and there was a picture in a flat in a round block. It's round three, eh? There was a picture of Swami there, and there was a garland there. And he was facing the picture, and my back was to the picture. Then, during the conversation, the garland just swung left and right. Then he said, you see, Swami acknowledged your presence. I said, oh, I see. It couldn't be the wind or what, you know, but it was, you know, in a round block, there's no wind. So again, Swami showed his presence to me, you know. So talking about flat, so one, another interview, I can't remember which year, but early years. And I said, Swami, can I have so difficult to come and every time I pray so hard to you to give me the round block flat, you know, I don't want to stay in the White House. Coming from Singapore, coming to stay in the White House is a bit not suitable, you know. We are quite spoiled now, you know. And say, okay. I said, Swami, can you give me 40 flats, one block? I said, how do I give you 40 flats? Okay, you tell secretary about it. So, merrily, I went to talk to the secretary, and I went back to Singapore, and I got devotees to donate to the flat. And that was done. And I came back another year, and Swami called me to interview again. I said, Swami, I've done the project, and when will the flat be ready? And the flat was ready in 1 year. And the subsequent interview, I came back again. Swami said, you see the secretary, he will tell you where are the flats. So I went to see the secretary. It was Mr. Rajan at that time. He was a PR man. And he told me, these are the flats. And he showed me the plan and said, W7 early devotees have been shifted to W8 behind. You know, I think England devotees. And W7 is for you. I don't know why Swami shifted everybody to W8 and I took W7. Today I have a flat W79. So 40 flats were distributed to everybody, and the secretary said, I caused an international incident because there's so many people wanted a flat, and here I am coming very innocently, very pure motive, Swami, I want 40 flats. He said, just give me 40 flats.
That's right. Just ask and you shall be given.
Yeah. And because you ask without any motive, you know. I'm not here to do some big thing or what. It's just that I don't want to stay in a flat. So a lot of people also do not wish to stay in a flat.
You mean the shed? Brother Henry, may I ask, what is the spiritual or religious tradition that you grew up in?
Okay, my parents believe in ancestral worship, Buddhist, you know. And we pray to the formless God.
Okay.
It's called, for the Chinese listeners, it's called Bai Ti Kong. Ti Kong means the formless God. Mm-hmm. So in very day, a job saying, you pray to the sky.
Okay.
So they already pray to the omnipresence, you know. Mm-hmm. And later, I studied in a Methodist school.
Mm-hmm.
So I attended the church service. Then I also went to the Catholic service and went to Catechism and the father wanted to baptize me. I said, hold on, wait, you know. I was in a Muslim community, and I listened to their prayers. So kind of doors were open for me to taste various types of religions, you know. But in Singapore, there are other sects too, like mediumships, Taoists, Goddess of Mercy. There are lots of, just like in India, there are lots of gods. In China, so the pantheons, gods, there are various types, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was my background. But I'm more flowing with Christianity, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's why Easter Sunday is that my linkage here.
Yes,
you know, how Jesus died, crucified, his disciples also crucified. Mm-hmm. That kind of history is attached to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's go back to more lessons that you have learned from those 40 interviews.
Yeah, so coming to the flats, so another interview subsequent to the flats. And somehow in a region, in Thailand, Indonesia, they found out that Henry Tan could get flats from Swami. See, so they urged me, why don't you ask Swami another 40 flats? So okay, I try. I mean, I'm doing four hardest, you know. And I came to Swami, can I have another 40 flats? I said, yes, you have another 40 flats. Okay. Same process. Went back to Singapore, talked to a few devotees. Those devotees I find that who are very close to Swami. Yeah? So I asked him, okay, so I got about 26 subscribers. At that point, I think something happened. And this is a lesson that people are jealous. Human beings are jealous. So words got round to Swami that Henry Tan is selling flats in Puttaparthi. How on earth can I sell flats? By the way, when I came, again Swami called me for interview. And Swami, I mean, he jokes with you, he's serious. And when I came into the inner interview room, he said, you are selling flats in Puttaparthi? I said, Swami, you know I don't sell flats. The first time 40 flats, we went smoothly. This is project number 2, you know. Same procedure. But people are saying you are selling flats. So I asked Swami, who told you lies? Who told you fibs? You know I don't sell flats. These people, and he told me, these people are jealous of you. But you don't worry. You tell them, after this interview, you tell them that I tell you to tell them that you are not selling flats. So immediately after the interview, I went straight to these people, A and B, I won't mention names here. But I was so upset. How could you believe rumors that I'm selling flats? You should know better. You're so close to Swami. So I was very upset. I didn't want to see them. I just wrote them a letter and said that Swami told me to tell you this. And that was the end of story. So the lesson learned is that no matter what you do, how good is your motive, how purity of heart, there will always be jealousy coming to you. And you must learn how to handle them. So at an early time, Swami told me how to handle these people.
How to handle them? Tell me.
Simply, you are so angry, don't face them.
Mm-hmm.
Be calm. Collect yourself at the right moment, right time, think properly, and then you tell them. So at that time, I kept my cool, didn't want to see them, also I asked to tell them, I probably would have lost my cool, but the lesson, oh, be calm. Then later, in the evening, I wrote them a letter. And this is what Swami said. So I learned. The key is patience. Don't overreact instantly. And this how most human people do. So now, another interview, I tell you, this flats issue over already. Another interview is, although I have very nice interview with Swami, but I also got scolded by Swami. So, I shall leave this part later. I tell the good ones first. The bad ones later.
Okay, as you wish.
So listeners know that I'm not all that good. Swami does scold me. And I love being scolded by Swami. Or else how does he know I'm here? So I must behave a little bit, right? Misbehave a little bit, not behave. Anyway, I want to share with you one episode where Swami's omnipresence. I used to come to Prashanti in October, sometimes with my wife, sometimes with other devotees. And during one interview, Swami called me. I went there, up to the veranda. I sat there. And when Swami, when he finished his rounds, he stepped on the veranda and he looked at me, "Where is your wife?" I didn't call her, because normally you say call her. This time, I just didn't want to call her. I said, "Swami, maybe..."
Why, did you both have an argument in the room before?
No, because Swami wanted to speak to me on some special matters.
Oh.
So I thought maybe why should not hear also, right? So he said, "Oh, where is your wife?" Ah, then I said, "I call her wife." Okay, so wife very happy, you know, came, you know. So during one, this interview, wife and some other devotees, and usually from the outer inner room, Swami position the lights, put on the fan, and had a chit-chat. And during the inner interview, Swami asked me, that was in October, Swami asked me, "My birthday, you come?" I said, "Yes, surely, Swami, I'll come, you know." Then came November, I didn't come. Lazy. I don't like crowd. There are too many people here. And I didn't come. Then on December, I promised Swami I come November. Never mind, delayed to December. I came in December. This is where Swami's omnipresence. He called me for interview again. This is probably about somewhere in the middle of all my serious interviews. And Swami called me, as usual. He called a few devotees in the outer interview room, and he will close the door, switch on the light, switch on the fan. Immediately he turned to me and said, in a very stern voice, "Why, my birthday, you did not come?" In my heart, I said, "Gosh, I'm going to get a scolding by him." This is Swami's omnipresence. Among so many people that come on birthday, and he knew you did not come. Even if I went, he wouldn't have seen me, right? Amongst the crowds and thousands, how do you know? The Swami knows everything. So I said, "Swami," clasped my hand, and I said, "Swami, I was sick. A little sick, but still can come, right? But it's actually too much crowd." Then he called us for the inner interview room. I was ready for a lashing, you know. "You lie, you promised to come and you did not come. Cannot break promise," the kind of thing, you know. But no, it didn't happen. He looked at me smilingly, lovingly, like a mother, and asked me this question: "Do you know how many people came for my birthday?" So I said, "Swami, I didn't come, so I don't know. You tell me how many." So he said, 50 lakh. Now, you know 50 lakh is 5 million. Any birthday during the olden days, where you have 50 lakh? Even a 1 million prachanti, you can't even move. So I realized something. That was a lesson again, a divine lesson. That there are non-human beings coming for my birthday as well. That's a count of 50 lakh. Angels, devas, spirits from other dimensions. That was my realization. Of course, Swami cannot tell all these things. He tell me all this and maybe I go crazy, but I realize it slowly, you know. And that's where some phenomenon maybe many old devotees may have known. Swami used to come up to the veranda and he would lift his rope a few inches up to his heel. And he looked down for a while and then he dropped his rope again and he walks. Why? These are the known, unseen spirits doing Pada Namaskar to Swami. But I don't know how many people realize that. What was that in the... But now, later years, Swami, you know, he didn't do all these things, you know. So, again, Swami's omnipresence. And on the one hand, he's very majestic outside. But in the inner interior room, he's soft like a mother, you know. So much love. And during all this interview, I've seen so many creations. So, Anand makes interview. There was this Indian couple, and I happened to be in the interview room, and Swami created a lingam for him. And I was next to him, and Swami took a piece of paper, gave the paper to him, and he put the lingam on the paper. And Swami went inside for the inner interview room with other devotees. I took the chance. I said, "Brother, can I hold the lingam?" I mean, created from out of thin air, you know. It's a way for his hand, the whole lingam. It's about 3 inches, you know, lingam.
Stone.
Yeah, stone. And
what color do you remember?
It's about blackish, purplish, black color. And I took it. Immediately, I put on my eyebrow here. I said I needed that kind of omnipotent power to the lingam.
Open your third eye.
Oh, I don't know whether that eye or what eye, you know. So anyway, and after I put it on my eyebrow and I look at the lingam, I could see Swami's silhouette, the whole image on the lingam.
Wow.
It's a light, you know, like, you know, coming out, the whole silhouette. So I return, thank the brother there for this opportunity. So again, so I had a great blessings, you know. So as I go on, I think Swami's omnipresence is very prevalent to me. And I don't expect anything from him, and yet he has given me so much blessings without asking for what purpose, I wouldn't know. So now I come to the 9 interviews in Whitefield. This is Puttaparthi. In Whitefield, there was this incident when Swami, I went to Whitefield with a Buddhist monk. He's the chief monk from Indonesia. His name, we call him Supung.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll come with a few of his disciples. He's the chief monk in Indonesia. And I went to Whitefield, and Swami called me. I said, Swami, the chief monk in Indonesia is coming tomorrow. Can you see him? He said, yes, I will see them. So the next morning, Swami just looked at me, and I knew that Swami wants to see us. So I called the chief monk and his 4 other monks, and we went to the Vrindavan. Yeah? Then we were standing inside the gate, and when Swami finished his round, and he came in. Immediately when the chief monk saw Swami, he walked almost about 30 feet down, bowed down, and did Pada Namaskar to Swami. Everybody saw that. Now, he was the chief monk, Buddhist monk in Indonesia. And he said, Swami, to me, is Buddha. And unfortunately, I didn't have a camera at that time to take a picture, so I could only remember it. And during the interview, only 3 of us went in. The chief monk, Swami, and myself. The rest of his disciples were outside.
Mm-hmm.
Again, very nice privilege to listen to what both of them were chatting.
You thought Swami was speaking in English?
English, and chief monk was in English. Mm-hmm. So I took a picture of it, you know, as a memory. So Swami blessed him a lot, and but before we had interview in Whitefield, Supung also went to Puttaparthi. And during the interview in Puttaparthi, Swami materialized a 6 inches Buddha, and with a chakra around the Buddha, golden, very heavy Buddha statue for him, and materialized a Buddha's foot for his disciple. Jade, Buddha's foot. Is it? This is Buddha's foot. So Swami, to this Buddhist monk, also very, very close. Swami is also Buddha, you know. So that was, again, I witnessed a lot of things like this. And Swami's omnipotence, I share with you omnipotence. There was this, I go back to the early years again, round block. And next, on my neighbor was a Himalayan monk. And we spoke, you know, just neighbor, after touch. I said, oh, you interviewed Swami? He said, yes. You also interviewed Swami? I said, yes. Hey, tell me your interview with the monks. He's a Swami or Himalayan. What's your interview in with Swami? He said, I challenged Swami. He challenged Baba, you know. When I was there, I chanted my mantra. Quietly. And then Swami just stopped him them there. Don't chant this mantra. This is bad for you. And Swami created Shiva's trident for him. He said, you keep this trident with you and you chant mantra to Shiva. And after that, you go and heal the sick. Don't be a Swami anymore. Go and heal the sick. That was one interview. He showed me that trident. Second interview, I mean, he told me, I was not present, but he told me, and Swami gave him a watch. They say, you are very hot-tempered, so I shall give you a watch. Right? When you are angry, the watch will stop. Then you find that you are backwards in time, then you know you have been angry. So you calm yourself, back to your normal self, the watch time will catch up to the present time. Now, science cannot explain this, you know. You know, his omnipotence, he can do it. You know. It happened. So another time when I came to Puttaparthi, he did not dress in his orange robe, but in blue. And he said, I'm very successful in Germany. I'm doing spiritual healing with Swami's trident.
Do you remember the name of the Himalayan monk?
I can't remember. He's a young monk. Mm-hmm. When he saw me, I couldn't recognize. He was staring at me all the while. Then finally, he revealed himself who he was. Hey, we spoke.
So, because he was dressed differently now.
In blue, so I didn't
was
know.
Was he a person of Indian origin?
Indian origin, mm-hmm. In Himalayas. So, mm-hmm. So Swami, I suppose at that time, Christians, priests came, and Swami Maitreya's a wooden cross, and I saw it also. So, during the early years, I was fortunate to witness all this materialization. So, okay, now I jump back to Whitefield again, another interview, second interview.
Mm-hmm.
This time, only about, there was a Canadian couple. This man was a former chairman of the site organization. Swami was sitting in a chair, and this couple, they were about 20 feet away. I mean, I don't know why they sat at the back of the room. I was sitting in front of the room next to Swami. And during some chit-chat, and on another group was a pregnant lady. I'll tell that story later. First, this Canadian couple. Swami got up. As he was walking towards the couple, he asked the wife of this chairman, he said, where is your wedding ring? And she said, Swami, you took my wedding ring. You changed my wedding ring to this ring that I'm wearing now. Then Swami, oh, then he walked there and he moved his hand and her old wedding ring materialized again. Exactly wedding ring which he took blue and changed 10 years ago. So where did Swami keep her ring? Don't know. Some divine storehouse somewhere, you know, in the astral. So she revealed this story to me. This was the original ring 10 years ago that Swami changed, and now Swami Maitreya returned back to me. So amazing. Yeah? Then this lady, there was another interview in Whitefield, and Swami Maitreya's a heart-shaped mother of pearl about 2 by 3 inches. And Swami opened up and showed her. It's empty inside. And he closed it back. And tapped it twice and opened again, full of vibhuti. And gave it to her. And Swami looked at me. You know why? She's pregnant. Very painful. So I'm giving her vibhuti. And she's the best singer in India. So that time I had a camera, I took a picture of that. Mother pearl, that's all I still have it. So again, Swami moves everything and... just by tapping the mother of pearl twice, empty space filled with vibhuti. So you can see that.
Brother Henry, you're talking about being a witness to Swami's instant connection with people of different religious faiths, like the head of the Buddhist order in Indonesia, or a Christian priest who could relate, or the Himalayan monk whom he guided. As a person of Chinese origin, what do you think is the scope of taking Swami's message to people of Chinese origin, especially in places like mainland China?
Sairam, dear sisters and brothers, I hope you enjoyed part 1 of Learning with Love with Mr. Henry Tan of Singapore. I'm going to play part 2 in just a moment so that you can listen to Mr. Tan's views on mediumship, clairvoyance and such matters which seem to confuse a lot of devotees these days. So please continue to stay tuned to Morning Glory as we slip into a short break. On the other side, you can enjoy the concluding part of this Learning with Love conversation with Mr. Henry Tan of Singapore. And this will be followed by the beautiful song Sai Ma Pyari Ma, which debuted on Morning Glory last week, and your feedback to this Radio Sai audio special has been especially encouraging. Thank you so much. So please Now enjoy the interview after the short break, where there is an important reminder for you. And after the interview, you can enjoy the music. I will be eagerly looking forward to your feedback to this two-part interview with Mr. Henry Tan of Singapore. Our email ID is listener@radiosai.org. Over now to part two of Learning with Love with Brother Henry Tan after this important message. The 90th year of Bhagwan Baba's divine advent is here. What are you planning to offer at his lotus feet? How about a gift wrapped in red? If you wish to partner with the Sai Healthcare to save a precious life, please take the time to donate blood at the Sri Sathya Sai Super Specialty Hospital whenever you are visiting Puttaparthi. The blood bank is open Monday through Saturday, 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Every single day, patients undergo life-saving procedures here, and a pint of blood can make all the difference. Let's build a favorable blood inventory. If you're a healthy adult, please donate. For more information, please visit psg.sssihms.org.in. Blood, it's in you to give. Please donate. Side up. Brother Henry, you're talking about being a witness to Swami's instant connection with people of different religious faiths, like the head of the Buddhist order in Indonesia, or a Christian priest who could relate, or the Himalayan monk whom he guided. As a person of Chinese origin, what do you think is the scope of taking Swami's message to people of Chinese origin, especially in places like mainland China?
We did try to bring Swami's message to China. But China, being a communist country, will have to take some time for it to develop. And we can see that certain Chinese influence already happening in Burjandi. And there is a center now in China, in Guangdong, where Swami's ashram is built. And some of our Singapore, Hong Kong, Malaysian Chinese devotees will go there and do some bhajans and some seva, you know, for the village and all that. Now, communist China government will know what's happening in any village, any district, any street. So you have a cadre who's in charge of the district. And this activist, the seva, has been going on. And the Chinese government obviously will know what's happening. So it will take time before the Sai organization can touch base in China. Because the government there is very worried about religious evangelism, Christianity. There's a sect called Falun Gong. Falun Gong is banned in China. Yes. And cult worship and things like this, and underground churches and all that. But set aside, we are not religious. We are spiritual. We are service-oriented. So from service, we can touch base with the Chinese community. And Swami's name will be known.
I think there will take time. Any interactions with Chinese people in mainland China about Swami?
It's not time yet.
It's not time. But have you met anybody there?
No, I have not. I know people. There was once I met a diplomat. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to go to Beijing. Mm-hmm. With three other devotees to help the school, you know. We want to bring the Chinese teachers to Malaysia to teach them about human value, so that we sponsor them, so that when they get back to Beijing, the schools, they can introduce some human value. But the Chinese system, they already have moralities and things like this. But perhaps from Swami's teaching techniques, they will learn better. And fundamentally, it's just love everywhere, you know. There's no differentiation. Just want to do something for other people. And with this kind of characteristics, kind of human behavior, those Chinese people will learn through our action. So I think more Chinese effort must be made to penetrate into China. But it takes time. It probably takes a lot of time. As it is now, you know, the recent passing of our former Prime Minister, the Chinese government, your Indian government, they all respected him a lot. So Singapore is very obvious now, because it's associated with Lee Kuan Yew. You know? I mean, you don't do right this stuff, but I just tell you. So I think we have a job to do. The mission forward is that we have to touch base with China, so that we have balance what's happening on the western side of China, the Muslims, you know. Because Chinese are also Muslims, so the biggest Muslim population in the whole world is from China, the western part of China. So with Swami's human values, all this, I think, is cut across all religions. I think that would be our mission 50 years from now.
Or maybe even sooner.
Maybe sooner. Maybe Prema Sai is here. We'll do something about it. His timing.
I see. And you're also, given your extensive exposure to various different schools of thoughts or faith groups from the Orient, including mediumship and exorcism.
Yes.
And so on. What are your thoughts on the need to maintain a one-to-one relationship with God?
I think for our Sai brothers and sisters, knowing Swami and knowing and witnessing and observing and experiencing his omniscience, omnipresence, omnipotence, what else do you want in life? Why do you want to go for mediumship? Why do you want to see miracles? Why do you want to see objects change from prayers? I've seen a lot that I give an example, and somebody will pray to a Buddha statue. Right, a small, maybe 2 inches statue. And the statue already eyes closed, mouth closed, hands closed. After intensive prayer, that metal statue of the Buddha, eyes open, mouth open, you can see the teeth, hands open. So I told this brother, who's also a Sai devotee, why do you indulge all this? You must go higher in your spiritual ladder. Not get stuck in all this kind of manifestation. It happened in everywhere, in Orient especially. Miracles, extraordinary happening, objects appearing of thin air. What is the use of all this? These are for fun, I put it. You know it happens, so what? Forget about it, go further spirituality. And that's what Swami is teaching you. Find that spirit within you, find that love within you, manifest, that's enough. I must share this story with you. Back to interview again.
Please.
I was not rich. Okay? And one Swami asked me to do certain things. And Swami knows everything. So during one-to-one interview, Swami is not here. Although omnipresent, you're physically not here. I think I can share this. I kept this secret for a long time. But today probably is the right time to reveal it.
It's a Radio Sai exclusive. Very good. Go ahead.
And Swami knew that I didn't have that much money to do. Although I could afford it. It's not a big sum of money. But Swami knows I don't want you to spend your money. I'll give you money to do that project. You ask me, how did he give me the money? Can you guess?
I don't know. Materialized?
He just waved his hand. It was in Whitefield. One-to-one. I have a few one-to-one meetings with him. And as I said, I don't treat him as God, you know, bow down, surrender. You know, I don't have this kind of thing. It's just that, Swami, I love you so much. God bless you, Jack. This kind of stuff. And Swami was there. I was kneeling down on his right. And he just waved his hand. One, two, and turned his palm upside down, a stack of US dollars. Then he asked me, all in $100 bill. Then he asked me, how many do you want? So I won't mention the number. I said, I want X number. And Swami slowly counted 1, 2, 3, 4 until X. And he took it and gave it to me. So I said, enough? I said, Swami, it's enough. You know, you cannot be greedy, you know. If the project costs so much, you ask for so much, you know. Since you want to give, take it, you know. And God give you money, you take and use. So I took it. Of course, the story is that ultimately I didn't use that money created you know, and then he went back to him again. Of course, I had photocopies of it, you know, before he disappeared. So you ask me, what happened to the balance of the stack of US dollar? Swami brought to his mouth, blew it once, the whole stack just disappeared in front of my eyes.
Now this was to start some business?
No, no, some Seva project. Okay. We're supposed to do for, in, actually, I review a cigarette, it's for Super Specialty Hospital.
And he gave you the money himself?
Yes, he didn't give from his wardrobe or his cupboard, he created it. And I said, how much you want? I said, X. He gave me X. The balance, he just blew one, it disappeared, don't know to where.
When this money, you, because it was given by Swami, you put it aside.
I put aside your
And then it disappeared?
It disappeared. Subsequent years later, it disappeared.
From where, your locker?
No, from my house. No?
Not stolen, right?
No, not stolen. See, Swami, this is some money, I don't want to use it. I have not used it, so please take it back. So, years later, he took it back. So, maybe I should tell you about a bad interview that I had. Bad incident. Interview all very loving, very nice. Nothing bad. I share you this about, since I mentioned about hospital. During one interview, Swami called a group of architects from England. Isaac Tiger was the lead that time. And Swami called me in just to observe what happened. At that time, I didn't have an inner interview. Just went to outer interview, observe what he was talking to, this group of architects and engineers. And Isaac came up, brought the plans to Swami, and asked, Swami, where would this X-ray department be? Swami took a look at the whole plan, pointed, here is the X-ray department. So, okay, roll out the plan, sat down. And Swami said, this hospital must be completed within 1 year. So one of the chap there said, impossible, impossible. Plans are not done. You need to design, you need to construct, all within 1 year. That was 1990, at the Super Specialty Hospital. And Swami heard that remark, got up. He was sitting by the wall, anyway, whole row, and it was very packed. Swami got up, went to the man who was laying on the wall, pinched his cheek, lightly tapped his cheek and said, nothing is impossible. I can change you from a man to a woman instantaneously. You know, hey, he was looking flabbergasted, kept quiet, didn't do anything. So the story, you know, after that, within 1 year, hospital was built, first operation started. So I was a witness to this. So, I don't know for what purpose I was there to see, but the lesson learned is that nothing is impossible if you have God as your partner. If you have a human being as your partner, it may fail, it may succeed. But with God, even you fail, God's wish, not your will, so why you fear? Nothing to lose. So again, a lesson I observe, nothing is impossible. So whatever they do, nothing is impossible. Just do it. Your intuition tells you, do it, you just do it. So a sequel to this hospital thing. So one day I'm very lazy, right? So during the hospital opening, there was VIP getting invitation card, you know, to go and all that. I don't bother all this, you know. Then somehow, to one of the side, Isaac saw him, where is Henry? I said, in the room sleeping. He said, why sleeping? Opening ceremony, you should go. So he gave me a card. The invitation for a dome, So I look at what dome, you know. So I said, okay, never mind, we took a tuk-tuk, I mean. When I arrived at the Super Specialty Hospital, all the VIPs were there. I was wearing a kota, how to go for that operation. So I went to, on the right side of the hospital, there's an open field. Nobody was there. So I told my friend, I just stand here and look at Swami from afar, you know. And after about 5 minutes, I was really late, no? But Swami didn't arrive at that time. So I sat there, and Swami came. When he came down from his car, he was supposed to go straight to the dome, right? To have this ribbon cutting, all that. No, he didn't. He walked to the right side of the hospital, went around, and there was a verdict voice chanting, I think. And he came past me. It's about 100 meters away. He passed me. Look at me, I pray to him, say thank you Swami, and he walked back to the hospital, then he started a ceremony. That's again, I don't know why that extraordinary blessing to me. So again, very happy. So this is something to the hospital again. So my mission today is to see what I can do for the hospital. I try.
As it said, to whom much is given, much is expected of.
Yes, because that is a responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And for Swami to give me all these interviews, maybe it's the right moment to share with listeners all the world that although you've seen the construction of Kawan Hall, the Buddhist calm, look at Swami physically, but you must know that Swami is all pervasive, even though he's not in his physical form. And this is coming from my own faith, my own intuition, my own understanding. There's so many interviews that I had that Swami's own presence, all knowing, you know. So maybe I can share with maybe one or two last ones.
Please do.
Swami, in the early years, when I came, this is something to do with a flats. And this one Singapore couple came here to lecture in the university, and he didn't have the faith that Henry Tan, did he or did he not send my draft for that 40 flats. And he had an interview with Swami. And on that day, he asked Swami, "Swami, what happened to the money that I've given through Henry Tan? Is the back flat being built?" Doubts, you know, doubts. But I had no doubts. It must be done. It will be done. Maybe I had no motive, no nothing. And Swami told her, "You don't worry. Your leader is coming now." She didn't know I was coming. And she was told by Swami, "Your leader is coming now. You ask him." And indeed, I was coming. On the way to Padapati. Swami knows that I'm coming, you know. So he knows, he's omniscient, he knows everything.
No matter which cab we are traveling in, okay, which flight we are on, he always knows.
So he knows I'm coming, so I came, and as usual, I mean, I won't say as usual, you know, it's his blessing, I was called for interview the next day. Then in the room, I said, "Swami," I commented, I said, "Swami, the flat I saw was during construction." I said, "Your flat, the window is up there, so small, you know. Very bad ventilation." And Swami jokingly, he said, "You can tell the architect to change." I mean, design all done, how can I tell the architect to change? He's joking, I tell the architect to change. Then after that he remarked, "You're no shame." They're looking, "Why no shame?" "Because your window is low, people can see what you're doing inside the flat. Therefore, our window will be high, so nobody can see." That was just true, it's practical, you know. Mm-hmm. People walk on the corridor, you see what's happening.
Yeah, privacy issues.
So this is kind of an interaction I had with Swami. And so this flat episode, I learned a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but whatever you do, don't do because you want some recognition. Nothing. You do things without recognition, and Swami will continue to bless you.
Yeah.
You know, and he will guide you to do whatever.
Swami always gives the confirmation if you're doing it from a pure heart, isn't it?
And you know what to do later.
So
on.
I think we have to learn to choose. Do we want the world to give us recognition and pat our back, which is going to be really fleeting, or do you want the Lord to be pleased with your offering?
Of course, with the Lord. Because
as devotees, we get carried away, and we look. Sometimes we forget who is the master that we are trying to offer it to.
Right, and that's where you must always pray and knowing that Swami is around you so that you won't be a bad boy.
Mm.
You want to be bad, also cannot.
Mm.
You force yourself to go to certain places that are bad, also cannot, because Swami will pull you back.
Mm.
And you must have this confidence. And Swami must have discipline, self-confidence. You must have. And many people who are on a spiritual path, and instead of marathon runners, they go backwards. Because they look for alternative, they look for options. You know, Swami is not here physically, and they're so attached to physical form, and they look for physical manifestation. which is to me is silly, because you're touch base with avatar. You should go higher in the non-physical form, in the fourth dimension, fifth dimension, 10th dimension, 12th dimension. We are not ready to know all this. How does Swami materialize object? Once I asked Swami, I mean not physically I asked Swami, I prayed one night and asked Swami, Swami, you created so many objects. I've seen pendants, lockers, japamala, diamond earrings, diamond pendants, and just, I was right below him, he just waved his hand and just came out. I said, Swami, I'm very curious how you manifest. I pray, you know. I mean like a child, I just ask, what, nothing wrong, you don't tell me, it's okay. That very night, I had a dream. And I was projected into the inner interview room. And I was somewhere up in the air, you know. And I looked down, I saw Swami. In front of him was a Canadian lady. And Swami materialized a huge metal plate for her. And what happened, I saw. Swami, both hands were moving. And then when he moved, all the atoms in his room just moved very violently. And all came and formed into this plate. So I realized that Swami, the atoms in the air, the oxygen, the nitrogen, the hydrogen air can be converted by you into metal form. All the elements are within your powers. That's how he created all these things. Now this is interdimensional. And Swami took a physical body, he did just enough for us to see, to know that's beyond 3D, beyond physical form. And that's where you must realize that you are spirit, you're not physical. So when you touch base with physical, you believe you are the spirit. Death is nothing and you welcome death. Yeah? So a lot of people claim that they'll live forever and that's why they get fearful and they lose track of life. And that's sad. So for us, once you touch base with Swami, no going backwards. Marathon runners all the way forward. And no ending. Until physical body walk through the final exit, which you all must.
That's wonderful what I just heard from you, Brother Henry Tan. I am just going to take this opportunity to remind you about two things. The episode where you got a little bit of a scolding from Swami.
Oh, yes.
And also you said the 1996 last interview I should remind you of.
Oh, yes. Okay.
So let's go through that.
Okay, I touched base on this as a bad devotee and then I end up with the last interview. Once I was in a plane coming to Puttaparthi and somehow with all these interviews, people in Singapore knew that if you go with Brother Henry Tan, you're sure to get an interview. I just 1 year in and 1 year out. So when I take a flight, I don't tell people. In the past, I used to organize groups. After that, I stopped. And in the plane, there were three devotees. Parent and a daughter. And this lady came up to me, sister came up to me, Henry, I don't care when I am preaching to them, when Swami calls you into you, I'm coming with you. Whether you're inviting me or not, I'm coming with you. What can I say? You know, interview Swami is calling. And when I came, you know, Swami called me. And he asked me, how many? I said, two. Because I came, my friend, two. The other three I met in the plane, you didn't come with me on this trip, pilgrimage. No? So Swami went to go. So I sat up right there, two brothers, man and myself. And they saw me coming on the veranda. They got up and joined me in the veranda. The man sat on my left. The two ladies sat in front of me. Swami finished his round. Came and saw the veranda. Three additional people. They say, how many? Swami, two. But now, I said, Swami asked me again. In the darshan line, Swami asked me, I said, two. Mm. At the veranda, I said, five. Immediately coming, you liar, bad devotee. I said, Swami, they just came to join me, you know. So that's why they sit here, I have to say five. But you can count, it's five, no more two. So I said, you liar, bad devotee. So after that, I felt so bad. And Swami said, okay, go in the room. I refuse to go because you call me a bad devotee. I don't want to go in. upset like a kid, you know. Then my friend got up, wait, I asked Swami. Then he asked Swami, can he come in? Swami look at me, okay, go in. It's a bit of like, okay, since you say I'm a bad devotee, I won't go in. You know?
Sulking little kid.
Yeah, like that. I was being like, and also, yes, maybe I lied, also I shouldn't go in for interview.
So two of you went or five?
After that, five went in.
Oh.
That inside, there's another lesson. And Swami is all knowing. So during this man, he asked, he was telling him his story about money. Money, you must not have too much. You must have too little because you cannot survive. It must be just fit enough for you to spend. And it's like a shoe. Not too big. If it's too big, it's very uncomfortable to walk. Too small, it'd be too tight. You cannot use it. And after he finished his little simple sermon, he asked the man, sir, what is your business? His answer was, I'm selling shoes.
And he was giving him the example of the shoe.
Yeah.
Not too tight, just
not
the
too
right
tight. And he knew he was selling shoes. Mm. So Swami is not knowing, right?
Mm.
Use that example to teach him a lesson. And also, for me to listen, you know, money just enough, don't make too much. And whatever money, excess money you have, you should use for society. To uplift society, those people who are poor, suffering, things like this. So just enough for your survival. So that is a bad devotee episode. So I have a lazy devotee episode, so I shall not say that because I will end with the last interview. So all this series of 15 years culminating to almost 40 interviews. And what I told you only probably a fraction of it. And I decided I was in Whitefield. I'm in Whitefield, you know, I don't stay in a flat, I stay in a hotel. And I went there. Swami, every time I come, that realization, you invariably give me an interview. So this time, I think I have enough. I observe enough. I experience it now. I got so much blessing from you, right? And I wrote a letter. My dearest beloved Swami, thank you very much for all the blessing you've given me all these years. I think there are more and more devotees coming to you. Please do not call me for interview anymore. Please call the rest. So I wrote the letter, sealed. At night. Next morning, I went for darshan. And I had my letter in my hand. Swami came. I had doubts then. To give or not to give? Am I crazy to give? So, very luckily, Swami didn't look at me, you know. So, I did not give it to him. Then I went back to the hotel. I prayed, to give or not to give? Swami is all-knowing, he's omnipresent. And when I penned the letter, he already knew that I penned the letter. So whether I give or not is immaterial. Right? But at a physical level, giving a letter, because I used to give Swami lots of letters from our centers, devotees, and brothers and sisters from Singapore. So I must give the letter. This, that style, that methodology, you know. And next morning I went. This time, Swami came. I was in one of the blocks. Swami walked by. Then I decided not to give the letter. I held it in my hand, on my lap. You know what Swami did? He came to me, bent down, took the letter from my hand, and walked away. Not a word. So I tell, thank you, Swami. We have a contract, sign and seal. I offer, you accept, that's the end of my interview. Truly, that was the end of my interview. However, there's another interview, but not through me, through my wife. It's in Whitefield, and Swami spotted her. You know, I thought my contract with Swami is ended already, right? So don't talk to me, I don't talk to you, you don't come to me, it's okay, you know? But my wife was at the front block, and Swami came call her and said, where you come from? Singapore. How many of you? And he said some numbers or what, and he said, okay, go. This was the only time that Swami talked to her and invited her for an interview. So I said, hey, my contract with Swami already ended, how can I go? So anyway, I walked to the Vrindavan gates there. I told her, you ask Swami whether he wants to see me or not. Then Swami told us, yes, yes, ask him to come in. That was indeed my last interview. Talk to him with Swami, Pada Namaskar, and happily ended. That's it.
Why did you want to end the interviews?
Because he gave me so many already. Mm-hmm. And I see the thousands of devotees coming, everybody yearning for interview, VIPs, organization people and all that. And
I wish more people like yourself had written that letter so that others would have got a chance. But I guess Swami only called those whom he wanted to talk to.
Of course.
Yeah. But now that, you know, you sought to end this relationship of so many frequent interviews.
But I still come back.
Yes. But did you experience any interview? Because he says you have to go past the interview and seek the interview where you have the inner connection all the time. That is not dependent on a visit to India.
Correct. Because you do continue your work wherever it comes. So I will do a bit of seva projects at the background, more educational, conducting seminars, creating certain pendants, bands, things like for people to reinforce their faith in Swami. Because when you have the image of Swami, it helps you. Like you go to a temple, while you pray, to the image. Because the image helps you. Ultimately, no image is inner view really. So when you come here to India, it's basically to thank Swami.
Now, Brother Henry Tan, you have so many businesses or business interests in a diverse fields. To what extent has Swami influenced your decisions? Did you seek his advice on business?
No, because by all this business, even now I'm supposed to be retired, but I'm still as busy as ever, you know. So all this business came to me because of what I am, and they know, these people, my partner, know that I'm a Sai devotee, so they are very happy to have a business relationship with me. And so I guide them a bit of wisdom and directions to go. And happily we just develop all these businesses, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So to me it's like a blessing. You know? Why would I be, like for example, this my intuition in Puttaparthi. I look at before there was Chitravati River. It's so dirty and polluted. And that's how I ended up in water technologies. Something I want to help the ashram. There's a lot of rubbish here every day. 200 ton of rubbish. Where did you throw it to? Then I went to agro biotechnology to recycle the garbage and fertilizer. So that farming can start. All the barren lands around here.
So are you going to bring that technology to Puttaparthi?
It's here, but I just haven't found the right person to talk to. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Swami will decide when is the right time.
Mm-hmm.
When there's a critical moment like global warming is here now, hot weather now, plants cannot grow, and when it grows full of pesticide, people get sick. All these are kind of linked. You know?
Okay, even at the expense of being a slightly repetitive, I have to ask you this. Given your very close physical proximity to Swami,
mm-hmm.
and this abundance of grace that you have received, very few people can
I
even
don't know,
imagine.
I thought it's very ordinary.
Well, so you thought, but you know, the people who have been Swami's devotees throughout their life, when Swami was in the body and never had a single physical interaction with him also, people who come for seva, people like many of us. What would you say to people who are missing his form after Mahasamadhi to such an extent that they are finding a need to go and seek some sort of a connection, a solace, and a connection to Swami through others, whether it's through some form of mediumship or through some other god men or women?
They don't need to because Swami has said, oh, by the way, back again to interview again. Another one was interview.
Yes.
I told you that Swami said, I and you are one.
Mm.
So that already got stuck in my mind, you know. So why would, and then later years Swami in his discourse keep telling people, you and I are one, you and I are we are we, and then you are God finally. I mean, Swami has said it so many times already. So why would you want to go to, you are already at university level, why would you want to go to secondary again, why you want to go to primary again, and see all this mediumship, all this benefits, for what? There's no value seeing all these things. When you see all this, it doesn't affect you at all. Just a bit of thrill for the moment, that's all. It doesn't transform you. It doesn't make you a better person. And it's worse because you keep seeking this, like opium, you know. You take the opium, you keep on going there again and again. And that should be stopped. Because you have media. You see Swami, put on the videotape, you see Swami talking already. You see Swami singing already. Although physically not there, but in a digital form. What's the difference? You hear Swami's voice, you hear Swami's action, you see Swami's creation. Video is there, digital form is there. Why you need the physical now? We are so lucky this period because of technology that we can capture every of his moment and see. So you don't need to go to another so-called agents or mediums or things like that, because there are plenty. They're just using... just remind me again, one more story and an interview.
Yes.
Once I talked to Swami, and one-to-one again, and I knelt down, and Swami put his face closer to my, almost about 6 inches away, and very sadly, he told me this. People are using my name to collect money. Okay? That was during super specialty era, period. And he said the next very significant statement. He put his hand at his heart and told me, I am no ordinary Swami. That was the revelation. Swami, I know you are. At that moment, I know, Swami, you are God already. You are certainly not ordinary Swami. So what was my reaction hearing this? How would I feel? Keep quiet? No. I stretch out my hand. I touch his hand. And I spoke to him. I said, look at him. Hi, Swami. Please forgive them. They are only human. They acted like a human way. So they use your name for their own interest. But Swami was sad that people use his name. And he said, I'm not ordinary Swami. So we have to be very careful now, the lesson is that do not use Swami's name to collect funds in his name. Because people contribute. And who does the contribution? It is Swami in this people who tickle them to contribute. That's all. You must have faith in Swami that whatever projects, funds come in automatically. There's no necessity for public solicitation or create certain event or create certain devices or certain channels to collect money. It's totally unnecessary because Swami says so in discourse. I don't collect money from people at all. I don't work through agents. So we must realize this and don't get attracted to this kind of phenomenon, which as a Chinese I've seen a lot. I've seen a devotee who held on to the wooden stick and on a plate of sand, and after chanting in prayer, the wood will move by itself and it will draw messages on the sand for certain needs, certain cures. So you can see the wood is inanimate and moving. Just a man is holding it only, and another person interpret it. This is a mediumship. Plenty of mediumship. And you find Chinese temples, monks, they go into a trance, and they'll ask you, what do you want? What's your problem? And this monk will behave like a, say, the monkey god, you know, or some other devas, you know. And they will be exactly like this deva that people used to worship, the worshippers. And for those of this cult, like to smoke, like to drink, like to eat. So you offer all these things to the monk, and he will partake all these things, and he will go into the trunk, ask, what do you want? And you ask, yeah, family, problems, or financial. And this monk will tell all the answers. This thing happened. And it's like interdimensional, between the 3D, three dimension and fourth dimension. This thing happens. We see it in Singapore, in Malaysia, very frequently. So I think in India also a lot of mediumship, in Bangkok also same thing. But why do you want to get involved with all this when you have the divine presence already? This is omnipresence. So you must know that and believe in that and carry your life in that path, in that channel. The others are all distractions. That's my view.
Brother Henry Tan Kok Hui,
yes.
I thank you profoundly and deeply for sharing your time, your experiences and your wisdom with Radio Sai listeners.
Thank you for the moment, and I thank Swami for the privilege. Thank you, sister.
Sai Ram, brother.
Sai Ram.
धड़कन तुम्हारी सांसों में बसती है तो मेरी माँ
दिल की अनोखी सी धड़कन तुम्हारी सांसों में बसती है तो मेरी माँ
नजरों में भी तो है ख्यालों में तो है तेरे बिना
సూత్రము భారద్వాజ గోత్రము సకల దేవతారూపము రత్నాకర వంశము సాయి బాబను నీవు సాయి బాబను నీవు జీవుల ప్రోచే దేవుడు నీవు పరిధిలో వెలసిన సత్యము నీవు జీవుల ప్రోచే దేవుడు నీవు పరిధిలో వెలసిన సత్యము నీవు పాప గోత్రము కోటి పోసల కుక్క కుల్కి పల్కి గాని నీటు మాటల కోటి నేరడి
ఇది